Relations with Indonesia have reached a new crisis level following those bombshell revelations that Australia targeted the personal mobile phone numbers of President Susilo Bambang Yudhoyono and several of his top advisers back in 2009 under the Rudd Labor government. Indonesia has reacted swiftly, withdrawing its ambassador and, quote, reviewing the position of Australian diplomatic staff in Jakarta. In the parliament yesterday, Prime Minister Tony Abbott was unapologetic.
All governments gather information, and all governments know that every other government gathers information. I should also say that the Australian government uses all the resources at its disposal, including information, to help our friends and our allies, not to harm them.
Prime Minister Tony Abbott in the Parliament yesterday. Well, last night, Indonesia's Foreign Minister Marty Nadalegawa described Australia's response broadly as dismissive, saying, quote, if everyone does it, we don't, and this really hurts. 2.5 months ago, Bob Carr was Australia's Foreign Minister. In fact, in a recent interview, he warned Australian governments to think carefully before signing off on proposals for intelligence gathering from our spy agencies. Bob Carr joins us now. Bob Carr, welcome back to Breakfast.
Yeah, good morning, Fran.
How would you describe the relationship between Australia and Indonesia right now?
I think this is nothing short of catastrophic. We've all accepted the wisdom that Australia's got to have a first-class relationship with our nearest, most important neighbour, and this is going to make it very hard for the government elected in Indonesia in 2014 to move to a rapid normalisation. There's a sense in Indonesia that they always lose out, a public sense that they always lose out in dealings with foreigners, and this would appear to confirm it. So none of the half dozen suggested names for the next president is going to find it easy to do anything other than lambast Australia and our treatment of Indonesia.
Indonesia is clearly shocked, according to Marty Nadalegawa, clearly shocked to hear the president's phone has been tapped. Were you?
Well, I can't comment on matters of security or intelligence, but I said last week we've got to look at a way ahead here. I think the Prime Minister's words at question time yesterday were too dismissive. It's hard to take issue with the propositions he laid down, but the tone was too dismissive by far to have been helpful in the quick repair we need. I think Foreign Minister Bishop has got to apologise to the Indonesians. That's going to be a form of word settled on, inevitably. It can be now, or it can be in 3 or 6 months. It ought to be now. And we ought to work vigorously on the only way ahead here. And it's what, again, I put forward in a financial review op-ed last week. That is, we have our intelligence agencies, Australians and Indonesians, talk about, one, carving out areas that we don't touch, we don't venture into. If America can do this about our surveillance of the German Chancellor's telephone, we can do it in respect of Indonesia.
So in terms of what Australia does now, how Canberra handles this situation, Foreign Minister Julie Bishop says she can't comment on intelligence matters. So what do you believe she should do? Apologise publicly or privately, and what more behind the scenes then?
Yeah, well, my friendly advice to the Abbott government and to the Foreign Minister is you've used that language about not commenting on matters of intelligence or security. It's now, you're now under pressure to move beyond that, to set that aside, to form the apology that's the only thing that's going to be acceptable to Indonesian public opinion, let alone to the Indonesian leadership, who feel violated and feel as if they're being treated with contempt by Australia and its agencies. And second, offer Indonesians a level of intelligence sharing, I know this can't happen overnight, that approximates the sort of relationship we've got within the Five Eyes community, and to carve out areas that we don't touch. I would doubt that we obtained any useful intelligence from what happened here with the telephone calls of Indonesia's leadership. What we need to underline, both sides of politics, when we're in government, is the importance of weighing the intelligence gain, the possible intelligence gain, against the risk to a vital relationship should there be a revelation. And we now know that even from the American side, relationships and intelligence aren't respected the way we'd want. I think another part of this is to have very stern words with our American friends. I certainly know that they'd be having stern words with us if it had been a contractor clerk in Canberra who'd led to a slew of intelligence being flung across the world and doing damage to American relationships. I think Australia's entitled to be very, 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 very stern when it comes to the way we've been damaged. A vital relationship for us has been damaged because of the casual nature of safeguards on the American side.
Speaking of our American friends, last night the former Assistant Secretary of State from the US, Kurt Campbell, was on Late Line, and just to quote him, he said, "I can tell you that some of the most sensitive spying is done by allies and friends. I travelled to a number of allied countries and we had to be incredibly careful. I just have to think you have to assume that it's a modern fact of statecraft and you can't be naive about it," which echoes, in a sense, what the Prime Minister was getting at, I suppose. Now, you took issue with the tone of the Prime Minister's comments, but if we accept that spying by allies is commonplace, is the only diplomatic problem here that it's become public?
No, I think there's another diplomatic problem, and that is the nature of the spying. You'd like to think that the hand of a minister would hover before signing off on a proposition that, if exposed, would do huge damage to a relationship and offer little more than what we'd get from public sources. That's the sense of restraint that I think would be appropriate here. So one can accept all of Kurt Campbell's analysis. I can't take issue with it. But add to that the qualification, an important qualification, the sense of proportionality. Is the gain going to be so vital to our national security that it outweighs the risk to our national security should it be exposed? And we're reminded from the Snowden affair that exposure can come easily, it can come overnight, and it can come from a source where we might have least expected it, that is the American system.
It's 16 minutes to 8. Our guest this morning is former Foreign Minister Bob Carr. Bob Carr, this occurred in 2009 under the Rudd Labor government. Should it be Labor that is wearing this, really? And would it help if Labor offered an apology to Jakarta now? Would that be helpful?
No, my focus has been on the way forward for the Australian government. How do we get out of this? I can't analyse for you without breaching that very important convention that we don't comment on matters of security and intelligence. The way out of it is one apology, two, carving out in our discussions with the Indonesians matters that will not be subject to surveillance in future, and thirdly, making a commitment to share with them more intelligence than we've shared with them in the past. In other words, moving with the Indonesians towards that sense of collaboration on intelligence that distinguishes the Five Eyes community and its practice.
And Bob Carr, this comes at a time, obviously, when the Abbott government is working hard to manage and improve the relationship with Indonesia and to stop the asylum seeker boats. Now, you were engaged in that as Foreign Minister too. On this key policy area, do you think there will be blowback from Jakarta?
I can't see it being avoided. I think there's a deep-seated view in Indonesia that it loses out on dealings with foreigners. That puts pressure on any government. When President Yudhoyono, for example, responded to our representations about some of the prisoners in Bali by providing clemency, there was an eruption in the Indonesian parliament. It was seen as giving too much away. This just feeds that sense. I agree with the analysis you had from Professor Damien Kingsley earlier that the damage this has done to the relationship can't be exaggerated.
And just on another issue before I let you go, I noticed that you have come out publicly and supported the decision of the Abbott government to donate those two patrol boats to Sri Lanka to help with the people smuggling issue. Now, many have voiced concerns that these boats could be used to, in fact, oppress the persecuted who are trying to flee persecution and send them back to torture and other mistreatment. What's your response to that?
No, that view is nonsense, and it's based on a demonisation of Sri Lanka. Sri Lanka's emerged from 3.5 decades of civil war. And I haven't heard people demanding accountability from the Tamil Tigers, who, if they'd carved out a state in the north of the country, would have imposed a regime that would have resembled that of Pol Pot in Cambodia. They were a shocking, inhumane movement that invented and pioneered vigorously suicide bombing and had no respect for women and children. There's got to be a sense of a country emerging from a destructive 35-year civil war. There's no persecution of Tamils in Sri Lanka. I've been there. I've witnessed the sharing of power. Half the population in Colombo is of Tamil origin. What you have got is a government with authoritarian tendencies, for example, in its treatment of a Chief Justice, and an opportunity for Australia to engage with the government, not isolate it.
Just you say there's no mistreatment of Tamils. I was just reading last night a report from friends of a young Tamil man who was sent back to Sri Lanka, who said that he was jailed, beaten in jail, huge amounts of money demanded before he'd be released in jail. That sounds like mistreatment of Tamils.
I've been through all of this in enormous detail, Fran. Our High Commission in Colombo has investigated 4 cases out of the thousands returned. There have been 4 cases where people have beat a path to the Australian High Commission and claim mistreatment. In those 4 cases, subject to investigation by our High Commission, none of the allegations were found to be substantiated. Now, you've got a response from the United Kingdom and from Canada that is based on one thing, the political clout of the big Tamil populations. This is another example of diaspora communities seeking to drive Australian foreign policy, and it should be resisted. We should have Australia's national interest demands that we have a good working relationship with Sri Lanka on a number of fronts, and while there are human rights concerns with Sri Lanka, they are best addressed by Australia having a relationship that enables us to do what we've done under the Labor government, under the current government, I presume, which is to raise them, to press them at all the meetings we have with the Foreign Minister and with President Rajapaksa.
Bob Carr, thank you very much for joining us on Breakfast.
Thank you, Fran.
Bob Carr is Australia's former Foreign Minister. It's 11 minutes to 8.